I have a problem with David Hetty.
You can open a set by being like really distraught and uncomfortable and slow and saying,
I want to know what
Hello, welcome to I Have a Problem with David Hetty. I'm David Hetty, and it's been a little while since the previous episode, so I suppose I apologize for that. I guess it's more something that I've done to harm myself than anyone else, if at all. It's just been, though, a very busy time. This is being recorded in New York, and I came down here about a week ago, and before that I was in Montreal doing shows, and before that I was having some terrible fever, and then now, in fact, I have this awful stomachache, which I think probably was caused by eating some eggs this morning that were undercooked, that I had underboiled, and I think that's a function of being in a strange new place. Like, I'm subletting an apartment right now, and I can't make the eggs the way I want to, because I'm just not comfortable in the kitchen, and so somehow, like, maybe, anyway, so I'm feeling pretty ill, but that's not to say that this isn't a great episode, because this wasn't recorded this morning. In fact, this may be my favorite episode so far, and I think certainly it was the most enjoyable conversation that I had. My guest on this episode is Daniel. I think, am I allowed to use his last name? You know what? I'm not going to, because we had this interview at his law firm, the law firm where he works. And he didn't want the name the law firm used, and so I think, so let's just leave it at that. So let's call him Daniel, okay? He's a very, very good friend, and he's also a very intelligent, sensitive person. And I think, though, what makes him such a great interlocutor is that he doesn't shy away from saying what he thinks, he believes he thinks. He likes to provoke. I think he likes to antagonize, even. And he won't really censor. I guess everyone censors themselves, but he does it in ways that others don't. He's very he talks about things much more freely than I'm used to, and then I'm comfortable comfortable speaking. It's a long episode. It's a very long episode. It's like an hour and a half, I guess, a conversation. And I just think it's entertaining, and we go through so many different parts. And we talk about fistulas and double dates and classism and asexuality. And in near the end, he says sort of, he offers up one of the harshest criticisms of me that I think I've received. Also, I should say that it was recorded at his law firm, and so the recording quality is not as good as I would have liked, because I was on the road in Montreal at the time. And so I think if you try to think, like, maybe this is some sort of archived material from, the 50s, or was discovered in a boat, or something like this, then it's a nicer way of thinking of it, just not that things should be better, because, there were radio programs a long time ago, and people listen to those as well. So I think that it's certainly doable. Otherwise, things with me are generally okay. Being in New York, it doesn't matter so much. I just go out to do stand-up, and then come back home late, and then sleep in a terribly brightly lit room on a bed, and so maybe that also is contributing to the stomachache. What else? Well, who cares? That's not important. The important thing is that who's to say? I don't know. Well, it doesn't matter. Okay, look, so this is me and my friend Daniel, and I had a problem with David Hetty, and please enjoy. Bye, thanks. Bye.
It feels so much better.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
This is actually the first one done outside of Toronto.
Really?
We're here in Montreal, yeah.
And where are we, David?
Where are we? Am I allowed to say?
You're allowed to say. Don't give the name per se, but describe where we are.
We are at a law firm.
That's right.
It's a family law practice, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a family law practice.
Yes, it's my family's family law practice.
We're here, and it's Friday evening, 6 o'clock, and you're in suit and tie, and I'm in jeans and t-shirt.
And hobo beard.
Hobo beard. Yep.
Yeah, shocking all the interns.
No, they must.
They're disturbed.
Okay.
They made comments.
But I'm very happy. I'm very happy to have you on it, because normally, I'm normally doing an intro before. The actual, like, I have a recording intro on my own before. The
talk. I saw that.
But I haven't recorded it just because I've been so busy with other things.
That's fine.
So that's fine. But sometimes I redo it anyway.
Right. I figured you would do it at a later date.
Yeah.
No trouble. So I thought about this last night.
Uh huh.
And I even looked up the word grievance.
Hmm.
Because I wasn't sure if my things I had to say met the definition.
Okay.
I think some of them do, though, in a very shallow way. But most of them, I think, are more metaphysical. Things about you that disturb me.
Can I ask you whether, when you're looking up the common usage, the meaning of grievance, or you're looking
at the
words
in Oxford, the Oxford English Dictionary.
Okay.
In fact, I have it handy. In front of me right now.
Are you looking for the etymology of it? Like, you want to know the paseo, the root of passion.
I didn't get that deep. I didn't consult a linguist, for fuck's sake.
Okay.
I just looked it up.
All right.
The OED is the standard. So, a real or imagined wrong or other cause for complaint or protest, especially unfair treatment. There's a wrong that you must have committed, whether real or imagined.
Okay, in your imagination.
Yeah.
So, okay, clearly.
Yeah, right. So either objective or subjective. But the wrong part that you, I don't know, again, if the things that I'm going to say.
Real or imagined. Anything can be real or imagined in a definition.
You're focusing on the wrong point. It's the wrong, I think, that you should be focusing on. Because that's the part that's
oh, yeah, the core wrong. So why can you have a grievance with someone? Why can you have, like, an irrational grievance? Like a grievance where the person didn't wrong you, but something still upsets you. Is it about the objective or the subjective?
Well, either one. It can be subjective or objective, according to the definition. That's not the trouble.
All right.
What I think to be disciplined about it has to be a wrong that you committed, whether it's, again, objective or subjective.
I like this. I feel like we're in a law faculty, in fact, more than a law firm, really.
I anticipated that the setting would influence the tone of our discussion, being in a law firm. Me being wearing in a suit, being in tatters, that it would do something to help influence the tone.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah.
Right.
But
right.
I looked it up.
Okay.
And so I thought about it. I actually had some notes. Just to guide me in case, and to focus my mind. I guess I did take this as a mandate of sorts. It felt quite legal. I felt like I was preparing for pleading. But
a mandate being sort of like the technical term for a...
Yeah, let your listeners know, a mandate being in our context...
A file, a client's file.
Right. Someone comes to you, says, will you take my case? And that's, I have your mandate. I have to divorce you or get you custody of the children or... put your husband in jail.
I'm extremely interested to have this, excited in fact, to have this conversation.
Yeah, I'm feeling the excitement right now. Let's live up to it.
All right.
I'd rather you not look at my screen, because
I won't.
Because it's, I have it just for the listeners so that they know, it's on my screen right now, the notes that I took, and I have a big, beautiful monitor.
It is beautiful.
It's beautiful, expensive.
It's hard not to look at it.
I was going to say that's what she said.
Hmm.
Yeah, you wouldn't like that. So, where do I start? Right. Okay, yeah, I know where to start. This is, I think, the first time I met you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I didn't obviously know you. This was when I was dating my ex-girlfriend at the time.
Who lived next door to me.
That's right.
Right.
And important relationship, loved her a lot.
Right.
And she spoke well of you, so naturally I trusted her. And that you're a bright, peculiar gentleman.
Oh, that's nice.
That was nice. And so the context was, we were at a party. Actually, it wasn't your party. It was her party. It was evening time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were out, I think, on her balcony.
Okay. I think I recall this.
Okay.
I mean, I recall being on the balcony talking. I don't remember what the subject was.
Well, there were multiple parties, in fact. She liked to host these things.
Right.
And we were on the balcony. People were having drinks. It was a good time. I was also to situate myself, I was trying to ingratiate myself with her circle of friends at this point. The relationship was still rather young.
Okay.
And, she moved in a sort of, let's say, for the sake of an easy shorthand, a more sort of a hipster academic type of crowd.
Yeah, that's very well described.
Yeah, and a crowd that I miss now that we've broken up and
Sure.
I'm stuck hanging out.
It's exciting because you and I were both in law school, in different schools, though, different law schools at the time. And
that's
so
right.
There was that sort of, there is a nice, when you're in a professional program, it is nice to associate with those who are doing, like, genuine thinking.
not law school thinking.
Exactly. Less sort of technical, less praxis.
And yeah.
Or I don't know. I mean, I guess, people who are doing PhDs have their own self-doubts.
Oh, for sure. They're plagued with them. I think more so than we. They're just, a bit more.
They're more aware of them, maybe. But I have no idea. Anyway, so we're on the balcony.
And I was wittier then. I've lost some wit over the years.
Okay.
I remember I was cooking at the time. I felt as though I was entertaining people, making good jokes. And I made a comment, a joke, a setup, and it was a good joke. Involving a fistula.
Uh-huh.
So a hole, a cavity between organs, and in the context, it was, I was referring to a fistula, an anal fistula, on a woman so that you could sort of pass through the hole from the vaginal canal to the anal canal.
Okay.
That was part of the joke.
Okay.
I just really learned about fistulas at the time, like a week or a month earlier.
Yeah.
One of my new words.
Right.
And the setup was great. The timing was great. I didn't say fistula.
Mm-hmm.
I said fistule.
Okay. Well, that's what we're learning, our Italian, right?
Yeah, I guess I came across like a wop. No, but it... So people, obviously, they were laughing, I guess, from the timing, the structure. That's what made them laugh. But obviously, they didn't know because it's not a word. I mean, I fucked up on the fist. There's no such thing. It was referring to a fistula. But you knew what I was referring to. And so you said, you said in your own fashion, you said, you mean a fistula.
Okay.
Okay, that's what you said to me after I said the joke. And
Yes.
So I delivered the joke.
Yep.
And you were the only one in this circle of people listening to my joke that corrected me.
Okay.
Said you're referring to a fistula.
Okay.
Are you not? I don't know if those are your exact words.
Sure.
Right. And there was, well, at least what I detected, again, not knowing you, an air of condescension.
Okay.
Which, in hindsight... I probably deserved. I mean, it's kind of someone's. There's a certain arrogance in
telling a fistula joke.
Right. So I guess maybe I deserve to be put in my place. It was an objective failure on my part. I mean, I fucked up the word. And so I was really embarrassed. I was embarrassed because I I realized that you were right, that it is a fistula.
Did I say it in a way to sort of humiliate you?
Well, that would, I can't confirm that. I felt as though...
Okay.
I felt as though...
Right.
It was said to, yeah, sort of a gotcha.
I see. Okay, okay, all right.
Okay. And again, you know, I deserved it. I'm you know, it stayed with me. I never mess up the word again.
Mm-hmm.
But right then and there, my impression of you, maybe it was sort of a self-defense thing, was, all right, you know, we've got a sort of a smarmy guy that wants to, and clearly you're intelligent because the other people in the group, I don't think even knew what a fistula was at all. So
maybe they're just more fortunate than I am, you know?
Right, right. You obviously have experience. I don't know what it was, but I mean, you're clearly a dark person. I mean, I could tell just by looking at you.
I remember when I learned the word fistula. There was a girl in undergrad and she just made crass jokes. And she was a lovely person, but like, you know, kind of like a I don't know, very rough girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember she said, was making jokes about whatever, herself having one or something, just jokes. And it was just like, it blew my, I don't know, it was outrageous. So it's a word that sticks with you, I think, when you find out what it is, what it means.
Mm-hmm.
But like... Okay.
Well, and you know what? Yeah, because maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but I mean, it also, you said it without, there was no warmth in your delivery, you know, there was no like, you know, you mean fistula, buddy, or you have a certain, and I think it carries on to this day, even though I have a certain amount of love for you these days. I mean, mm-hmm. I think we're good
we're
friends.
Cool, yeah.
I really appreciate our friendship.
No, me too.
But you are, I think, tendency to come across a little detached or cold sometimes.
I have my insecurities, defenses as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing that's weird about this is that I don't, but like the first interaction you have with someone, that's a reason, like then you're just getting to know someone. Like how can you, like why, I guess it's possible like someone, you know, spits in your face or something. You're like, well, you know, I was a little offended by, or it was my grievance. But I mean, the way of interacting, like your way of interacting is also, you know, you like to provoke or sometimes even antagonize.
Sure.
And so anyway, okay, I'm not trying to...
Well, you know, and in fact, what you just said to join up with that comment, I think that's probably why it wounded me, because I felt as though you identified that part of my personality. Obviously, it was a brash, provocative joke to have made. I mean, for heaven's
sure.
sake, I'm talking about a hole in a woman's.
And I just met you for the first time, so you're saying this to me.
That's right.
And what kind of response are you hoping to receive from people? You're trying to, okay, go on. You're disappointed because you're not getting maybe the response that you had hoped to evoke.
Well, it usually works for me. I mean, right. Usually it's obviously some sort of maybe it's a power sort of move to meet people you don't know very well.
Yes,
and make an outrageous, perverted, horrific joke.
Mm-hmm.
But it usually works, and I get my kicks. And you stop me in my tracks right there.
But then, do you think? But to me, this is more a story like I tried to, you know, behave in the way I like to at party situations, and it didn't work out in this one instance. It's not that because of what I said. I mean, maybe, you know, because of what I did, you know, your gambit sort of wasn't as successful as it could have been otherwise.
My therapist calls it social wagering, is what he calls it,
okay.
That type of behavior, just in, for your own repertoire.
But then, I mean, I don't want to go into, like, too deeply into therapy, but isn't it good if you get people to meet you, to match you? I mean, you constantly want to be dominating in some way, in some sort of superficial way. In a social setting like that?
That's a fair observation. I mean, maybe the proof is in the pudding. I mean,
here we are.
I mean, there is something here. I respect your intellect. I think you're able to keep me in my place, and it's something that that I appreciate. It makes the relationship all that more challenging and exciting.
Well, yeah, you don't. Yeah, I mean, you know the master-slave dialectic, the Hegelian little bedtime story. Anyway, the master and the slave, and there's this power of, you know, relation, obviously, and over time, like, no one benefits from it, because basically the idea is that you want to be respected by those whom you respect.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the respect of someone you view as your inferior is meaningless. So the master gets nothing from the slave in that sense. And
who's the slave?
Who's the slave? In what?
Between you and me?
It's not a perfect correlate. Yeah. It's not how it works. It's just that in any relationship, you know, like even a father to a parent to a child.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's more complex.
Well, I imagine it's dynamic as well. I mean, sometimes I think you're my master. Sometimes you're my slave. I guess it depends in what the discussion is or what the relative power imbalance is in the given context. I mean, right here, for example, right now you're on my turf. I'm wearing a suit. You look like what you look like.
I recognize that. But you know what? I could have had that suit.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly, in theory.
Yeah. Okay. And I could definitely adopt your look.
Right.
Okay.
But then, so it's a question of choices. It's not about
No. I used to always say this back in the day that, you know, a multi-billionaire,
yeah,
he wants to live like a hobo, a happy hobo. He can go do that tomorrow. If a happy hobo or a hobo who's maybe is moodily relevant, if a hobo wants to live like a billionaire,
right,
he can't.
Okay. But this is a question where the hobo, did the hobo once have the opportunity to be this billionaire? And like, if I wanted, I could go get a job, a job interview next week.
Well, you'd have to, first of all, for the hobo, you have to really, it's complicated to say, did he have the opportunity? You'd have to really project that into all sorts of chain of decisions to right decisions to really make it to be a billionaire. But I mean, just to bring it.
Yes.
Yeah, but to bring it to you and me, I mean, yeah, no, definitely, because you have earned your keep. I think you've proven yourself to the bourgeois that you you got your law degree.
Sure.
You just revealed to me that your professional degree has you're no longer a member of the bar. You let it expire.
I'm rescinded.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I honestly meant that in the kitchen earlier when I said good for you.
Yeah, but that and I don't think this is the issue, but this is an issue.
Let's just reset. That was my first grievance, and it relates to the first time that I met you, and again, I think part of it, another person could have said the same thing, and maybe like you said, I would have respected them for saying it. But you still have your own personal style, David. I mean, there's something about you that, in when you deliver that, you come across as you come across like an intellectual. You're not the first. I'm not the first person to tell you that.
Yeah, but okay.
And I like to think of myself as an intellectual.
Yeah, and you present yourself like this as well. So especially if someone like for someone like you to mm-hmm. come off and say that the way that I reacted to you was untoward somehow, I think I'm just playing your game. If anyone else, like,
well,
if
there's definitely overlap in our intellectual game, the stylistic difference, I like to think, is that and
I don't call it a game though.
Okay,
maybe I
a condition,
did.
Whatever you'd like to call it.
Okay, it's different.
An attribute.
Okay, it's not a game though. That sort of.
No, you're right.
You're playing around.
Okay, touche. I'll take. I just mean to say, okay, the intellectual identity that we cultivate or that we give off. There's overlap in our intellectual style.
I think it's very different though. They're very different.
Okay, well, you're focusing on the wrong thing.
Okay.
I just mean to say that, yes, acknowledge both third parties have both identified in each other, one another, that we can be intellectuals, we come across that way.
Okay.
My point is that there's still a stylistic difference in the way we express our intellectual identity.
Okay.
And I think that yours, and I hope you don't take this the wrong way.
Obviously.
You probably
will. I would
will.
Hope not.
Well, I mean, I also don't want you to see this as me building myself up. I mean, I could be self-deprecating.
This is just your stylistics. This is just your style. I mean, so obviously I understand. Yes, go on.
That you're not, I wouldn't call you a warm person, someone that raises their hands above their head with big smiles and pats people on the back and gives people noogies and you're not that type of person.
True.
Now, I don't think that I necessarily fit that exactly,
okay.
But
okay.
I think I'm more in that direction than you.
So I should have been like, fistula, and then like giving you a hug or something like that.
It would have softened the blow.
But I would do it because I think you could take it. I think, or maybe I thought you were being abrasive. Maybe I wish I could recall exactly how I said it, because that's
mm-hmm.
obviously key, because we're talking the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, anyway, I just think that this comment coming from anyone else would be a little more understandable, because they wouldn't be courting that type of repartee. Like, I think you enjoyed that. Maybe not in the first meeting.
You know, and what you're saying right now is what I think you actually you expressed in some nonverbal way when you made that comment. You identified it in me. You delivered it, I think, in that way. There was some sort of, there was a shining there. You kind of communicated to me telepathically, you know, I get your shtick,
right,
and I'm not going to receive it warmly.
Right, right, okay.
And so, and it upset me in a fashion. I guess you could call that a grievance. I felt as though maybe there was another fashion that you could have accomplished the same thing.
But you were, okay, but maybe I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, because you said, even then, going into that party situation, you were like, oh, I want to kind of impress, or I want to make, you know, I want to establish who I am.
Yeah.
Because of what your ex maybe had said about the other people who were going to be there.
Yeah, that's fair. And I guess there was some mounting behavior, I guess, I was engaging and so you didn't let me mount, and frustration ensued.
Can we go to the next one?
Yeah, the next one, actually, that I have about you, and this is something that I don't think... I think the first one we just discussed, I think, is more of a grievance. I think it fits.
Okay.
But this one, I don't really think it fits. I think this is more something, like I said earlier, something about you that disturbs me.
Okay.
And maybe it's unfair. Okay. And I hope this doesn't fray our relationship, It's a bizarre observation, but I feel it in my bones.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about your sexuality, your sex appeal, or lack thereof.
Lack thereof.
Lack thereof.
Okay.
that causes me that disturbs me. I'll describe. I'll put it in context. And this was in fact one of the. So it's actually chronological, because that was the first time we met.
Okay.
On that balcony. Fistula, and then afterwards, fistula, and then afterwards, sometime later, she, my girlfriend, had another party. This time it was during the day. I think it was a Sunday, for whatever it's worth.
Okay.
You had dropped by, and you had a girl with you.
Uh-huh.
Okay? She seemed like your girlfriend, you know, she didn't strike me as a steady.
Okay.
But there was sexual chemistry. I found out later you were putting it in her to be.
That's okay.
Right. So and the thing was, okay, and I'll tell you this, and don't take this the wrong way. You know, when I met you, I thought that you were gay or asexual.
Or asexual?
I didn't detect any heterosexual spark in you. I think, you know, and look, it's, you're clearly heterosexual. I've come to know you.
Okay.
But I didn't detect it. I felt like this, you came across as, I think it was part of that detachment that I felt that was there. A certain, like I said, you don't give people noogies. You don't like warm interactions. That's why the asexual thing kind of occurred to me. There's something about you that's a little antiseptic, a little...
Bother. Okay, but does this still bother you?
No, well, I'm getting to the observation.
Okay, okay.
So yeah, that, I identified that in you. I thought that was my impression. Then I see this girl with you, and this girl, I think she was a McGill. You were at McGill, and law at the time. I think she was a peer.
No.
I
don't know.
Perhaps. Other way.
I don't think so.
Not only was she a girl, she was attractive.
Okay.
And in a fleshly female way. She had some curves.
Not everyone thinks I'm asexual. So that's, not everyone detects a lack of a spark.
No, I wouldn't think that other people do, but
Okay, so she was like a good-looking girl or whatever.
Good-looking, but it's not only good-looking. You know, I could have, if she had been like some sort of, I don't know, pencil-thin, detached, you know, ghostly sort of woman,
mm-hmm.
I'd be like, okay, that fits my conception of David, because David comes across as either asexual or gay, so mm-hmm. he's going to have some sort of creature with him that may not be, may not strike me as, you know, becoming and female and sexual.
Right, right, right.
And she was. And so it just kind of disturbed me a bit. And I was wondering, you know, what is David's appeal? Because, I mean, I don't, no, no, no. Okay, no, let me. I knew you were appealing in some ways. Like I said, I appreciate intelligence. I think most people do.
Okay.
That definitely came across.
Okay.
And you seem like a man who marches to his own beat.
Okay.
And that's something that I think is very important in another person. So I could see appeal on that plane.
Right.
But I couldn't for the life of me picture you, with a girl, getting it on. I couldn't picture you with like a girl wanting, I couldn't picture you with like an erect penis doing things that people do in bed. It just,
and me more so than anyone else in society?
I don't know, in society. But
I mean, come on.
In my immediate circle.
Really?
I mean, yeah, you stood out in that regard. That was my impression.
Who are you to presume what other sex lives are like? I mean, you don't know what someone, presents him or herself, and then in bed they're completely different. You can't read someone. I mean, the meek person, the librarian takes her glasses off and lets her hair down and all these things. I'm like, why?
Well, I didn't say I
don't know what you're like in bed.
No, and you can't unless, you're invited to find out in some time, but otherwise, no, it was that, of course, I'm entitled to my impressions.
But this bothers, but it's not really a grievance. It's something that turned your skin or something like this, maybe?
It disturbed me, and the worst part, too, is not only was she attractive, she was also very intelligent, so I guess there was something that, she struck me as intelligent,
I wish I knew who this was.
I don't remember her name.
Okay.
But, It just disturbed me, made me furrow my brow, rub my chin, and then afterwards, over the time that I've known you,
mm-hmm.
I don't know the notches on your belt. I don't know the
which is how I normally, this is how we discuss these types of things. Typically, that's the language we use.
Isn't that what people say?
I guess, maybe
I have my belt. So
I have a belt right now. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, I don't know. A scribble on the wall. Like,
okay.
Anyway, and she was, and since then I've noticed you've had success. I mean, the other women have been attracted to you. I've seen you, from what I understand, you've slept with other women.
It happens, yeah.
It happens, who are attractive and interesting.
But this is so, so outrageous. There are so many, like, far worse specimen out there. Like, what do you want?
You're missing the point, okay? You're a good specimen, but you're not you were not, to me, a sexual specimen.
Okay.
There are people out there who are fucking douchebags, who are stupid, have shitty values, who have tattoos and grease their hair back,
right.
And they get plenty of women, but I look at them and I say, that man has a certain animal magnetism. That man has a certain, I could see a woman just, slumming with that guy.
I think you don't understand anything.
Anything. I'm not the first person, maybe, to say this to you. Am
maybe,
I? I mean, not in so many words.
Maybe. This is normally the pillow talk that I have. Normally after the act, we're sitting there, and it's like, you know what? There's nothing.
Right.
Nothing.
You're tremendously asexual, David. I don't even know how we completed the deed. So that's something that disturbed me, and related to that is... Because, your looks, like, physically.
Okay, this is, yes.
Okay. I mean, they've developed over time, like, my thoughts about your look.
And we've gone camping before. We've gone swimming together.
And in fact, brings me to the point. You have a certain vanity.
Sure.
Which everyone's entitled to. But you have a certain vanity about your body.
Sure.
I've noticed that you're very willing.
This isn't why I don't understand. This is a grievance, though. This is just pointing out things about me you don't like.
Well, it does sound like that. Well, look, I preface this by saying things about you that disturb me, and things and if it's a grievance, it's like something. I focus on the word wrong.
But it's
you
not.
Know?
Yeah. Okay. Wrong.
And so wrong to me means something wrong. You caused me to think that there's something wrong with my universe. My universe would have told me that a guy like David is asexual. And is a good specimen in other regards,
right?
But sexuality and David, they're oil and water. That was my perception. You disturbed that perception,
right?
Caused me to feel as though my worldview was wrong.
Okay,
was out of whack.
Okay,
and it's resided in me. I've never communicated it to you till now.
But isn't this about learning? Like, don't you go through this every single day of your life when your expectations aren't met? Because you presumed something that wasn't the case?
Yeah, but
and so this is someone else is so something has wronged you in that sense. Like that seems like a very weak usage of the term.
But okay, but are they always resolved?
Are what always resolved?
Well, you have, like you said, you know, life is a learning experience. You have an expectation; it doesn't turn out,
right.
And so that's life, Daniel, is what you're telling me. But what I'm trying to say is that doesn't necessarily mean that the person really came to a complete resolution.
So am I supposed to change in these ways? Like, would that wrong you less? Would that no longer wrong you then?
I'm not inviting you to change. I'm just trying to communicate to you. I think your goal in this show is to have your friends tell you, reveal things to you that they find problematic, that are wrong that you've committed. Like I said, I'm using it a bit loosely.
Yeah.
This is where my mind took me.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't think I can be faulted for that. And again, I forgive myself, I forgive you for disturbing my prejudice.
It's like a black guy that tips or something, and you're like, well, look, buddy, this is, sorry, I just, it was some idea I had last night. It was like some joke idea. There's not some, anyway, but like that sort of thing, like, you know, you see someone who doesn't fit the mold,
mm-hmm.
and that person has somehow offended you or wronged you. I mean, that's good. I'm glad then.
I mean, yeah, of course you could find a silver lining. It's expanded my horizons. I've realized that a guy like David can be sexually appealing to good, high quality
women. I can't get it up. Maybe I have other ways. You don't know.
No, I don't know. And you know, and that actually leads me to, I think, and the last sort of sub-point in this is that while you clearly have had some success with good women, as far as I can tell, I don't know, again, your whole repertoire,
mm-hmm.
that I still find you rather asexual. I know you're a little squeamish when we talk about sexual things.
Like, but you talk about things so much more openly than anyone else I know.
Fair. But I would expect a guy that goes up on stage making jokes about fucking genocides and pedophiles.
Right.
There's something peculiar, something curious happening here.
No, the performance is totally removed from the person.
The performance has nothing to do with David Hetty. Completely divorced from David Hetty.
Well, no, in fact, that's someone who I think is more reverent of these issues and has, you know, would be more willing to make fun of them in public.
Mm-hmm.
Like someone, because, you know, that's why it's, to me, it's funny because they're so sacred somehow.
Okay, so they're sacred, so you have to go up on stage, give it its reverence that it's due to it by going up on stage.
And fucking with it.
Okay.
Because otherwise, that's what's funniest, I think.
Okay, so if anything, you have tremendous respect and awe for sexuality, and it has to be framed in a beautiful frame, and I can't just walk around and say, you know, I want to fuck that girl's pussy, and if she has a fistula, it'll go into her anus, or I can't say that because I could see it already. You'll start squealing.
I don't like that stuff, and I've walked out on a double date we had once. Remember that?
Was that because of me?
Yeah.
Oh my lord! Well, now you're turning the tables. This is not. Do you have a problem with Daniel Goldwater?
That's not what it's about. But I just mean that. I mean, look. I mean, conversation.
Well, we have to talk about that though, because that event. It's wow. You know, I didn't even remember that.
Really?
And you know, that's not a grievance I had with you, because I felt bad for you.
Because what happened was for people who aren't the two other girls, who are clearly anyway. But what happened was we went out on a you had a girl you want to see or something, and she brought a friend, so you phoned me up, right?
Yeah.
And the four of us went for a drink.
That's right.
And then I left pretty prematurely, like after like a drink, maybe?
Well, wait, listen for the listeners. The way that you left.
So what happened was, I was just very uncomfortable, because I think you were, like you were saying at the party, like you use the word fistula, you try to provoke, you try to make people uncomfortable, you try to, I don't know, the social wager. And to me, it was so inappropriate, I couldn't believe that you were saying these things to these two girls whom we just met.
Okay, wait.
And I just felt uncomfortable. And also, one of them was associated with a professor of mine whom I respected very much.
Right. Nonetheless, but okay, while this is like the second or third time you called me out on that and I've admitted it.
Okay.
Can you at least...
On what?
On my provocative sort of social wagering, which is often sexual.
Yeah.
Can you at least give me something in return and just admit to our listeners that it often is said in a warm, affectionate manner. It's not said in a manner to hurt people's feelings.
No, it's not going to hurt people.
Because there are people who can be like that. The people who could say, like, I don't know, you have a little dick or your tits are small, or to say something that is nasty.
You don't say things like, no, but you do things to make people uncomfortable. You want to make them ill at ease. And you will ask them very intimate questions, like about their own sexual behavior when you just met them.
But I'm not. I think it has an air. It's respectful when I say it in a way, even though at its core, it's crossing social boundaries.
It's not. It's a weird way. It's in one sense respectful because you're not playing according to the rules of the social game. I don't mean game in terms of like playing around, but in terms of the rules of social interaction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The rule set.
And so when you fuck with those. In a way, you're saying, I respect you so much that we don't have to do what everyone else does. And that's refreshing. And I think that's a way of almost getting to know immediately whether this person is worth my time. Because if this person's going to caravan away, you're like, well, fuck it, what have I lost? Nothing. And if someone meets you, it's a way of making like a closer bond right away. So
thank you. I think that's generous, and with all humility, I think it's accurate.
Okay.
Just to qualify that. So I just don't want the listeners to think that I'm at this fucking double date,
right?
And I'm saying, yo, bitch, your fucking pussy's falling out. I wanted to be clear that it's said in a certain with a certain generosity of spirit, or maybe that's not the correct expression. Maybe something. It's said with a certain warmth.
It's a playfulness.
Okay. So, which leads to you walking out,
yeah.
Then that's your problem.
With
discussion, a sexual discussion about sexual matters that is not mean-spirited.
It's not mean-spirited.
So then why does it cause you such indigestion?
Because I find it unseemly. It was unsavory or something. Like
what the fuck are you? You're a Jew from Toronto.
Yeah. So what does that mean?
Well, I mean to say, you raised in a barn. Are you an evangelical?
Come on.
That's my point. I find it doesn't gel with the rest of David. Because
that's not a performance. That's not a performance. I'm meeting people for the first time. I don't know them, and it's not like a party situation where they can just walk away to another conversation or whatever. Mm-hmm. We're sitting, the four of us there, and with these goddamn pints in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want. Look, I'm going to push my own boundaries, and yours are, you know, are greater than mine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. I mean, I walked away because, like, I didn't just, I don't know.
Did you not have the courage to address it? I mean, you know, I think
you want me to look at you and say fistula? You want me, that's the
same
thing. Give
me a setup. Don't just say the word.
No, but just to be like, look, like, Daniel, I think this is inappropriate. Like, can you turn it down?
Can you find an affable? You could find an affable way to communicate that to me. I'm open to criticism. I think you know that. If we were in that context and you were to say, in some way, maintain your charisma to the girls who are watching. At the same time, I understand there's a certain balance because there are girls watching you. You want to be desirable. You could have said something like, Daniel, you know, yeah, that's beyond the pale.
Yeah,
and here's a joke, we're all together now.
That's true.
But you walked out. You walked out of that fucking date, like it was so bizarre. In mid discussion, you know, and they were having a don't they were
really
a good, I think they're having a good time.
I don't know.
Well, maybe I'm not autistic. they were enjoying it. They were smiling.
Yeah.
And okay. You just said, I have to go. Bye.
That's like, it? There was no pretense?
It was very, very brief. You just got up and left. It was the most bizarre thing. It was as if you had it wasn't even like you had an emergency. You said it in your usual detached fashion.
Okay.
And it was bizarre. But that, just to close off the sexuality thing about you that I find disturbing.
Yeah.
Is that...
You do or you did?
I mean, I've come to accept you, and okay. I, you know, like I said, I mean,
right.
I love you with a lowercase L, and
okay.
But
all I want,
right? I just want you to know. It's again, it's said with good intentions, but yeah, no, there's still something about you, and you know, and that also is something else that I thought of in preparation for this. But again, for a guy that is into pretty pretty extreme subject matter when it comes to his comedy,
mm-hmm.
I find it funny that there are certain things... Oh, okay. Here's the specific grievance.
Okay, good.
When we went on that camping trip that you just alluded to earlier.
Yeah.
So the listeners should know, we went, David and I and Danny, our friend Danny, our mutual friend Danny.
Yeah.
Gregarious funny guy.
Lovely boy. Man.
He's,
yeah, I don't know what I'm saying.
I don't want to. A lovely person.
12-year-old.
He's, yeah, I don't want to say disparate. I love Danny.
Okay.
And at one point, we were in the drive home to, I think we were camping in Ontario, we were driving home, and you were particularly prickly with him the whole time, I felt. I felt as though, for some reason, he got on your nerves a bit more.
Was the first camping trip?
That's a good question. I know, I think it was the second. I think it was our second.
Okay.
Whatever. I noticed on that one trip that we were at, and we were on, he was getting under your skin particularly. But there was one thing Danny was referring at one point to, a Halloween party that he was at where he was dressed up as a Latino.
Oh, right.
Okay. He was dressed up as a Latino gangster.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, the pictures were on Facebook, and you had probably seen them. I don't know if you were at the party.
I was at the party. I remember.
Oh, you were at the party. Okay, yeah. I wasn't at the party.
Okay.
So we all saw, in one way or another, Danny's Latino gangster costume.
Right.
I thought it was fucking funny.
Right.
Okay, we're talking Latino gangster, so people understand.
That's disgusting.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, okay? But Latino gangster, let's understand, it was very clever, because it was referring to, I think, a certain early 90s kind of aesthetic.
The little pencil mustache,
and he had the bandana, and he had the button, his top button. He had this oversized button shirt.
Okay.
And it was all buttoned up to the top. And that was the style at the time. Okay. If listeners know of the film Colors, I recommend you Google image search the film Colors.
Okay.
With Robert Duvall. He's a cop in that, and it's all about the drug trade in South Central LA. Anyways, and there's gangsters like that.
Okay.
It's a known aesthetic. I thought it was fucking inspired.
Okay.
And yeah, and what you just said now, you found it, you really got worked up.
It's repugnant.
Repugnant.
Look, I can't have an aesthetic response to something. Look, I'm not saying it wasn't well crafted and conceived and like he pulled it off well, but like what if someone wants to pull off, you know, fingernail scratching down a blackboard? I have to embrace that. It ruined. I didn't like seeing him. He.
No, but there's a no. That's an unfair comparison.
Why?
Because nails on a chalkboard, I think 99%. It's objectively unpleasant. I think it approaches objectivity. When you're talking about someone dressed up as a Latino gangster, and you find it objectionable, it's a value thing that you're bringing.
First off, I was drunk and probably high at the time.
You're
walking that
wrong.
Party.
Oh, at the party? Yeah.
Okay. And so I was maybe a little reacting a little more openly than
we weren't at the party. But just to understand, to situate ourselves, you made this comment in the car ride back from our
comment.
Well, it was something what you're expressing now. It was repugnant. It was gross. It was stupid. Awful.
Yes.
Yeah,
so.
You were really worked up about how bad and what bad taste that costume was. So you were not stoned in a car with
right.
us. You were sober.
But at the time, I thought it was repugnant and disgusting and all these things.
But you didn't reevaluate with your sober mind. You
but
still felt that. You still feel it now.
Well, I'm referring back to my memory of it.
Okay.
If you were to walk in right now, it would probably be terrible still, because that's how I feel about it. That's all I know of it.
Well, the feeling resides with...
So why does that bother you, though? Why is that a problem?
Because what I think it is that, again, funny coming from a guy like David Hetty,
okay.
who makes repugnant jokes. In fact, for the record today, in
yeah.
fact, on fucking Facebook,
yeah.
one of his shows that he was at...
Yeah.
A person that was an audience member left a comment.
This bigot, you mean?
This, well, he's partially...
Clearly he's a bigot.
He's clearly a bigot, but, you know, a soft bigot, just like a provincial Jew who just is obsessed with Jew issues. But that's not the point.
Okay.
The point is that this gentleman, or maybe not a gentleman, a bigot, at this David show, left a comment on the Facebook page for the show,
yeah.
saying he found it very offensive, David's child molesting jokes.
Yeah.
You go up on stage, you make child molesting jokes.
Right.
But you find Danny's costume, a Latino gangster costume, you find it outrageous bad taste. And what I think, just to finish my thought, the conclusion,
okay.
and I think it coheres to other things about you, I feel like you don't enjoy lowbrow humor.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I can't imagine you laughing at a fart joke.
Right.
You know, I feel like, and I feel like that's, again, I'll join it up again to your lack of warmth, your detachment. I mean, a fart joke is universal, David. I mean, you could go around the planet. You could go to tribes in Central Africa or Polynesia, wherever. They will laugh, but not David. David doesn't find it funny.
I don't
like fart jokes. But I think, and it makes your soul twitch. Like, it makes you really uncomfortable. Like you got so worked up about this thing, and it's like, Jesus Christ! Like, can you? why are you so, and I think, again, that's part of your intellectual identity style, I think, again, that you have some intellectuals, you can have an intellectual that that likes a fart joke, that likes, you know, sort of lower, baser things.
Right.
But simultaneously is a high-minded person and
right.
can appreciate a sophisticated discussion.
Whoa.
But you're not. You're a person that it has to be on this sort of this higher plane that is lacks filth, lacks guts, lacks flesh, lacks. You see, I think mm-hmm. am I building
something? I think
something?
It's a curious thing to say because it's not about being an intellectual. It's more about being a comic, maybe. And so maybe I have issues with fart jokes as a comic and not as, you know, who I am outside of that. Because there's certain, like, I don't know, like, what's a good fart joke? Like, I even don't like saying the word.
Mm-hmm.
But that's maybe...
So you find it problematic. You have a problem. You have a problem. You have a problem.
Right. Why is it a problem?
Well, because it causes you discomfort. Another person who's just as good as you, or just better than you in other domains.
Decorum. I have a sense of decorum.
Right.
Violates my sense of decorum.
That's right. That's right. And I think you might want to reevaluate that. I think that your sense of decorum is beyond the norm, and it's not necessarily justified. Mm-hmm. I think what ends up happening is a guy like Danny, who let's say is not a boorish fellow. I mean, Danny is a very intelligent person.
Sure.
Simultaneously.
Yeah.
Who also enjoys
and
boorish.
And a very funny guy.
Super funny.
Yeah.
And yet, David can't deal. He gets worked up.
Just for someone to present themselves, to look so ugly, intentionally, it's an offense.
Ugly. Define ugly. It was quite clever. He was referencing something quite specific in our culture.
I understand that.
It wasn't in cheap and easy. Okay, it was not like the cheap and easy.
I understand that, but it's like if it's so unpleasant that I can't even get beyond the unpleasantness to see what's clever about it, then prima facie, it's like, I can't get, like, that's it. That's what it is for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if someone...
Ugly as defined by you.
Yeah, okay, but look, what if someone is blasting out some beautiful aria at such a volume that it's bursting your eardrums?
You're wrong again.
Why?
Because you keep trying to draw parallels to things that are objectively unpleasant. No,
for me it was unpleasant.
Okay, that's my point. For you it's unpleasant. That you're bringing your problem to it. Other people don't.
You're saying you have a problem with my judgment, with my subjective feelings. My feelings, what I find ugly.
Well,
beautiful.
You've identified your sense of decorum. That's what you said. Just, it violates my sense of decorum. It violates my taste. I expect people to resist the urge to make jokes that are...
Yeah, of course. I want a world where people aren't, you know, kicking people in the face either.
Well, but again, you keep drawing these parallels that don't apply.
Why isn't that subjective? Some people might like that.
No, because a kick in the face. I think, like, you're just gonna take the average. We're in a law firm here.
Yeah.
Okay. What guides the law?
What guides the law?
The reasonable
laws.
No.
Other laws.
Well, interpretation of law. What guides it? The reason.
Other laws.
That's you're saying that because you have a problem
with
law. But no, it's the reasonable person.
The reasonable person is determined by how other judgments have understood the reasonable person.
Okay, but
it's all circular.
No, okay, but it's a starting point. I think if you speak to most people,
yeah.
And you say, think of the reasonable person. Don't think of the exceptional person. Think of what the reasonable person would do or would value in this situation. That's why it's not controversial in law. If someone kicks you in the face and you take an action, a claim against him, you're on good ground. If someone like you were to take an action against someone and say, that Latino gangster outfit,
yeah,
I deserve reparations, my values have been violated, you're on shaky ground. The reasonable person wouldn't necessarily agree with you.
But
so you are beyond you're a marginal person. You're beyond reason. Reevaluate.
But I'm not expecting Danny to change for me. I just didn't.
No, but you robbed Danny of really of savoring his costume.
Why? He got great effect of it.
He did, but he was revisiting it in our conversation, and you just got into this tizzy, and then it became about David's discomfort and David's lack of how would I put it of of humanity. You come across as someone that doesn't like the flesh. You come across as somebody that's, again, antiseptic.
I gotta like a Latino gangster. Like, do I have to...
You don't have to like it, but you don't have to get so fucking worked up.
I just didn't speak to him for the rest of the party, whatever. So that's the whatever.
You didn't speak to a guy who you respect, who's a good friend of you, because he was... I mean...
No, I did speak to him. I told him I didn't like it.
Okay, but don't we both agree? I mean, that guy, that fucker who wrote on the Facebook page today,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Who was offended by your molesting jokes. Yeah. You and I are allied in saying that this guy is a fucking jerk. He's a fucking self-important idiot because he enjoys... There are certain people out there who enjoy being offended. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
There are certain people who search to be offended by things. It gives them a sense of power, that they are the arbiter of social norms.
Right.
And these people are jerks. We filed them away in the jerk book.
Okay.
Okay? And I'm saying what you were doing there approaches that.
Okay.
Let's put a pin in that.
All right.
This next thing I think is probably going to, you know, frame the rest of it. This is about you being... We've had a lot of discussions about this, and I've teased about it before, I think. I've already alluded to it, your self-presentation, right? It's not about your self-presentation, per se, your this kind of hobo chic thing.
Okay.
It's about your bohemian thing. I mean, all bohemian... Well, yeah, bohemian, it fits. You're also an artist. Yeah, bohemian.
Okay.
An anti-materialist thing about you. Ultimately, what I'm trying to say is that I feel that you're a class traitor.
Really?
You're a class traitor. I'll never forget when it first came up, and I've shared this conversation with other people close to me, my father, and my therapist, because the conversation, I guess, touched something in me. We were at a bar once, and you were, I think, at the point, I don't think you had started your articling, I think you had done all the interviews with the big firms at that point.
Okay.
As far as I understood, you did quite well enough in McGill to at least get your foot in the door for the interviews.
Yeah.
And I think you were in a searching place, and you were talking about the sincere joy that you get from comedy, and that this is something you'd like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on this spiel about the law world being full of XYZ, about people being phonies, workaholics, people who are not your people.
Okay.
You know, materialist, unthinking phonies, the whole Holden Caulfield routine that
okay.
you...
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a nice, that's a very generous interpretation.
Yes. Well, I like you. And you're going on about this, and again, and you were saying this because I said to you, because at that time, I believe that I was still in bar school. I failed bar school. I'm not sure where I was exactly in my career path, whatever it was, but I was still committed to this,
right?
As a life choice, as a career path. And I told you that, you know, David, it's you're decadent, I think is what I said to you. I said that there's something really self-centered about what you're telling me. You're telling me that you had the opportunity and the brains and the ability to get this law degree from a very good school, to do quite well enough,
mm-hmm.
and you refuse it because you'd rather go up on stage and just shit on the audience by talking about, you know, cum shots in girls' faces and raping boys and genocide jokes.
It's not
and
purely shitting on them. It's also trying to, like, you know.
I'm glad you admitted that.
Educate.
Okay, that's more endearing. No, but at least you admitted that's a component, is shitting
sure.
on them. Okay.
Well, fucking with them.
Fine. Whatever. Choose your words.
Okay, it's different.
And I really felt this. Yeah, that you were a class traitor. I said, look, you know, David, noblesse oblige. Okay.
Can you define that for me?
It means that when you're of noble origin, which
mm-hmm.
I'm using that playfully because we're both, I guess, of good stock. Good stock, okay, as in we're both of bourgeois parents, professional parents.
Professional parents are bourgeois.
Okay.
With the professionals, yes.
Professionals. Make a good living. Middle class.
Sure.
Everyone thinks they're middle class. I always resist the expression. But
okay.
whatever it is. We're of good origin. Let's just
sure,
say that.
Okay.
And we're intelligent enough. We're not incapable.
Yeah.
And so it's we have an obligation to do the higher order things, to do things that are not the cheap and easy to really lift up society. That and essentially what I'm trying to say is
oh my God, you believe this?
Yeah, and I think that's what I was communicating to you at the time, was that lawyers, there's something heroic about...
What does it mean? Well, how's a lawyer heroic? To lift up society, you said? What the fuck? What is society? Society, you have to go sustain the powers that be. You have to go and have... Like, what are you doing that's so lofty by becoming a lawyer as opposed to anything, first off?
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Why don't you just go do what you want, if you're able to?
Okay, I'll take those 2 points. What makes it heroic?
Heroic, yes.
Yeah, I'm being cute. But heroic, why? We're jurists. We're obsessed with justice. That is the calling.
Oh, my God. That is so blind. You're so blind.
Okay.
That's
even
what you believe.
No, well, okay, first of all, no. I can juggle multiple thoughts at the same time. So
okay,
well, part
I'm
of it...
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Don't worry. I'm not offended. Part of it is obsession with justice. We read all this fucking case law. We read all these fucking laws. We always want to try to understand what the intention of our elected officials are to try to make a good society. And
yeah.
We are there to represent people to make sure that they achieve some sort of justice.
Lawyers are functionaries in the legal system. That's it. They're like mechanics of the law. That's
okay.
It.
So you wouldn't give any credit to the lawyers that brought Brown versus Board of Education or brought Morgenthaler or just recently the striking down DOMA and striking down...
I think
down,
what's more...
You don't think these are heroic people? You
I
don't
think
that,
more heroic is the people who are actually... Like, the lawyers are the agents. They're not the ones who actually are the driving forces behind these changes.
You're a little detached when you say that, David. I'm trying to bring it to things that are objectively social goods, not to get into any controversial things. I also think it's a good for a businessman to realize a claim against someone who screwed them
sure.
over.
Yeah, okay.
It's not nearly as romantic.
Sure.
But I'm using examples
But what's wrong with forwarding... Okay, what's wrong with forwarding values? Either you don't want art in the world, that's not heroic in the same in whatever way similarly.
It's more indulgent. Look, I'm not trying to say that artists don't play a great important role and that there's a lot of artists that deserve to be praised.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is that in your particular situation,
yeah,
where you got this great degree, you had the ability to do something that really is.
Maybe I didn't have the temperament for it. It didn't work out for me. I wasn't the best lawyer.
Okay. Well, that's not how you communicated it. You communicated as a value thing. And I'm sorry, you could talk about art as being important. And what I'm about to say, I just want to make it clear, I'm not saying this to be pleasing to you.
Okay.
I love your comedy.
Okay, thanks.
The first time I saw you on stage... there was a whole new level of connection and admiration, okay? And that guy sounds little cheesy, but I mean that, okay? So, but while saying that, though, there's still a part that is, what is your contribution?
I don't look at it in terms of my contribution. I look at it in terms of what I want to do. How do I want to draw myself? I can't eat an office every day. I want to kill myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was fucking miserable. I was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was enough. Even if had I been doing wonderful, great things, it wouldn't have been enough to sustain me. And even then, was I contributing to the world so much more than the next artisan student they would have put in the seat? Am I contributing more by doing that than what I'm doing now? You were, like, it's a much rarer contribution, whether good or bad, to do what I'm doing now, than for me to do the law that I would have done.
Well, when you say that you were unhappy, depressed, miserable when you were doing it,
mm-hmm.
Get over it? This kind of was my reaction?
That's how I did, by leaving.
Uh-huh, okay, well, I don't know if that's really a resolution. Like, I don't know if people, when they come up against something that makes them feel insecure, makes them feel unhappy...
Yeah.
That the solution is more avoidance. I think that a more together person who has a more intestinal fortitude, who wants to get over it, would really ride it out a bit more.
No, people change their life circumstances. People move countries. They get divorced. Mm-hmm. They change jobs. They go back to school.
I wasn't convinced that you really exhausted the issue. I wasn't convinced.
They didn't want me. What do you want? They kicked me out. What the hell was I supposed to do in that situation? They told me to stop what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Who's
they? Let's identify.
My employer said, you have to stop doing the comedy you do or else we're going to let you go.
Okay. First of all, I don't know, for the listeners, they should know that David worked at the Department of Justice for his articling.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's always alienated. He was particularly alienated when he was there in general. But then his superiors found out about his comedy.
No.
You tell the story.
Anyway, it's such an old story. I told them about this. They knew this day one. They knew it on day my application, my mm-hmm. resume, my interview.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, whatever I did became a conflict of interest because a litigator for the federal government can't be, you know, put on an act on stage saying these heinous, allegedly heinous things.
Mm.
And so they said, you can choose the job or you can choose the comedy. And look, maybe I got let go for my own, you know, lawyerly lack of, you know, competence.
Mm-hmm.
But how the hell will you ever know this?
Yeah, but whatever the reason was, that's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is that that's a particular situation that is not representative of the career. That it's like saying, I was dating this girl.
Okay,
I didn't like the sex, so I stopped having sex. Like, well, why don't you try out a few different girls, then come back to me, and then I'll be like, if you hate it every time.
No, I hate it enough. I hate it enough at every single stage.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
So this is your. I failed my class. Somehow.
You failed your class. So what's the alternative? The alternative is to let down mom, is to let down dad. It's to let down Toronto.
Yeah.
It's to let down Canada.
Yeah.
It's to let down...
Fuck them. If their expectations for me are things that won't make me happy, what do I owe anyone else?
Why did you go so far in it in the first place?
Because I'm a moron. Because I'm a fucking moron. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't go back on my mistakes?
Well, I just think that what might really be at play is what you just said, the fuck you.
I don't have an aggression.
Differences
about this.
That you want to settle with the modern world.
No, I don't.
Modernity is too harsh for sensitive David.
I'm not defining myself in opposition to them. I'm saying this is what I want to do.
Uh-huh.
Period.
Right.
The fact that you want me to do something else doesn't enter into it. If you keep imposing your values upon me, then you can go screw yourselves. But otherwise, I don't care. I mean, I have my self-doubt. It's nice. Like, look, you don't think it's like a question? Like, it's nice to have, you know, it's nice to have a secure job. Mm. It's nice
the office that we're in is quite beautiful. The listeners should know.
It's a very good
furniture.
Yeah.
Expensive.
Huge monitor, beautiful monitors on every desk and everything.
Tailored suits.
Yeah, but so what? I don't want this.
Uh-huh.
I like the money. Yeah, money's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but are there other ways of going about it?
Is it not, like, partly just reactionary? Is it something that, is it really...
Yeah, I think maybe projecting a little bit, somehow. Maybe that's really presumptuous, but, like, these aren't my, that's not how I operate mm-hmm. at this point in time, mm-hmm. I believe.
Well, let me then, fine, if that's your theory, let me just summon a bit more evidence just to really make my point.
Okay.
Another thing that disturbed me about... your value set, and that, again, I've shared this conversation. When we were on that camping trip,
uh-huh.
you'll recall this. Discussion about children and having children.
Right.
Okay. So David...
But all these things, these are just views that don't accord with your worldview. These shouldn't offend you.
Okay, but try to justify it to the listeners. Let them decide.
Okay.
Okay? David does not want to have children.
That's not what I said.
Well, what did you say?
I said I wouldn't want to willfully bring about life.
Well, I think that's what I said.
Not really.
Well, I would hope it would be with will, with intention.
Why? You can accidentally bring about...
So you... Okay, that you're fucking... You're splitting hairs. So you wouldn't mind accidentally bringing life into the world?
That wouldn't be as bad.
Okay, well, you...
It's like if I accidentally, you know, hit someone, that's not as bad as if I do it intentionally.
Okay, but to you, it's on the bad scale. You don't want to have kids. I think we're not talking. We're talking across purposes.
Sometimes I don't want to have. I question the bringing about of life.
Okay, and let I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I think the way that you articulated it, you know, Dave is not an environmentalist with some sort of Malthusian bullshit in his mind or something. It's not about some sort of greater good that he doesn't want to bring because the world is too cruel or something. No. I think what you said to me, I don't want the burden.
Is that what I said?
You said it, or you said it sounds burdensome. I don't see the self-interest. I don't see why someone would want to have a kid. And we got into certain an axiom.
No, I can see why people want to have kids.
Well, but when you in your well, you don't feel it. You can maybe identify in other people. You don't feel it.
Some people don't want kids. Sure, yeah, I don't want a kid at this moment. I don't want a kid.
Well, that's not what you said. You said don't want kids. You didn't say like you know maybe in the future. I mean, everyone can change their mind. But you felt you were really advocating for this. You were saying that you don't see, you don't really see it. And I think we butted up against some sort of axiomatic, you know, difference between the two of us, because I didn't really know how to counter it. To me, what my mom makes up, just I want to have children. To me, it's
why?
Well, to me, it's quite self-evident, so it's hard to justify. It's self-evident to me that it's being an atheist, being someone who doesn't, more than atheist, I don't believe in a higher power. I don't believe in spirituality. I don't think those mean anything. Mm-hmm. I'm a humanist, really hardcore.
Okay.
But I still think that if I'm going to try to search for a meaning of life, I can't think of anything that comes closer than making another human being.
It's a pyramid scheme. you want to get yours. You want to get back what you've given.
That no. It's because I mean, this might sound a little pretentious, but I think I'm in love with humanity. I'm in love with the human project. I find it a very glorious enterprise to fashion another human being.
That's so.
I find it tremendous. I find it a tremendous calling. I think it summons our best instincts. I think that there's also a legacy component, which you might say is more selfish.
It all sounds pretty selfish a little bit. Do you want to create another person?
Well, you know, you're intelligent enough to know that selfism as a counter argument is pointless. And altruism doesn't exist. Everything we do is in self-interest.
But there's a very different thing between being so selfish to the point where you're willing to create another point of self-consciousness, as opposed to just acquiring another inanimate object, for instance.
Well, let it be said. I plan to be responsible to this life. I don't plan.
Well, you plan to raise it in the way you see best.
Well, what else can I do? I
impose upon it your own worldview.
Well, what else should I do? Should I impose someone else's worldview? Would I arrive at my values and I want and I've tested them out. To me, so far, I think they're the best. I would be responsible
to
this human.
But just acknowledge it's the absolute most selfish thing you can probably do.
As opposed to what? I don't see that, you know, breathing is selfish. What kind of it's
not really. You're not, because you're using someone to such an extent that you're bringing them about. Jesus Christ.
So you don't identify any noble qualities in your parents by having raised you, cared for you, taken care of you when you were in times of need? You don't recognize any goodness in that?
No,
is that what you're telling me?
Loving. No, that's not. That's
well, that's what you're suggesting.
Things.
That's what you're suggesting. That's what I plan. I don't plan to raise David Hetty, but I mean, I plan to be.
It's
there.
Not about my look. It's not fair to bring it about my parents. Like it's this is more like a.
Well, not fair. That's what we're discussing. We're discussing raising children and parenthood.
I think that you do things because you want to do them. You think you'll enjoy being a parent. You do them because you think you'll enjoy it. And I think it's really like, I have a joke now, basically, about how when a friend comes and tells me they're pregnant, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And I think that, really, you ought to wait like 7-8 years, then turn to the kid and say, well, how do you feel about this? And then if they're happy, then you offer your congratulations. Otherwise, keep your fucking mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
So, because, like, I don't know what their intentions are with this kid. I don't know why they're doing it. Are they doing it to keep the marriage good? Are they doing it for, like, tax purposes? Are they doing it
because,
the
reasonable person? What's the reasonable person? What's their intention? If you just think about the
reasonable person doesn't think. Wait, we're talking about reasonable or, like, the average person?
Well, the reasonable person. Someone who would present it a problem will apply basic reasoning to it. It overlaps with the average, I guess.
What do I care? What do I care?
Well, no, because you're just arguing that. I don't. Because you're trying to find the marginal examples. You're like, well, maybe they're doing it for tax purposes. Maybe they're doing it to molest
Most
the kid.
People do it unthinkingly because they have nothing else in their lives. They have nothing else they can think of doing.
Uh-huh.
That's any better. And this is like an obvious way of giving themselves meaning.
Okay.
It's the worst thing to
so,
do.
So,
I
so,
think,
so,
to bring
did, so you think that people have children because they're bored?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and again, you're always you know
you're saying
you're,
yourself
you're, no,
you're
no,
saying
you're,
yourself that, you're, that the project the greatest project a person can have is to bring about another person.
I think that's tenable.
That's incredibly circular. That you're saying life is meaningless unless you somehow.
Well, I didn't say life is meaningless without. I just said I can't think of something greater than. So it doesn't mean that you can't have meaning in your life without children.
Okay,
and also you're playing debaters games here when you're saying that it's ultimately selfish. Again, everything is selfish.
No.
I don't see the point.
Yes, but that is most selfish, again, because you're bringing, you're actually creating something.
Why don't we evacuate selfism from the discussion, okay, and talk about just good and bad? Because you could talk about it's selfish to rape a child to get your rocks off. That's selfish.
I thought about that as well. That's the one that the guy didn't like last night.
That's right. That's a cruel act of selfishness. Okay, and then there's selfishness.
Yeah, totally.
You know, Gandhi, a selfish guy. He was doing this to. I think Gandhi was a jerk, but I mean, someone who you admire, someone who caused a lot of, you know, brought a lot of good to the world, is doing it for selfish reasons as well, because they're compelled to do it because it's their worldview. Because
right.
So you know, so the selfism should not enter into the equation. It should be about, you know, is it a good gesture? Is it a good intentions? Anyways, all that to say, we could carry this on. But
okay,
my point I'm trying to make is, I was trying to support the point about you being a class traitor.
Uh-huh.
And
I think my class allows for this type of behavior.
It does. I don't know. I think you're. I don't know what your mom would think of that. I don't want to be...
What do I care?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to live my life in deference to my parents?
No, I'm just talking about people that have been that have been good, who have good values. Or
so what do I owe them?
You don't owe them.
Well, I'm a traitor, right? So I owe them something, clearly.
Well, because, I mean, it sounds trite, but power and responsibility... I mean, if you have...
I'm glad you prefaced it, but you took this thing off. It sounds trite.
Well, it's been overused, but if you have, that's why I meant my noblesse oblige, that's what I'm trying to say, and that is I'm trying to say that if you have the ability to bring this good into the world, if you have that opportunity...
I am bringing good into the world.
By making cum shot jokes.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I find it wonderful, don't get me wrong, and I think you provide an outlet for society. I think people can live vicariously through what you're doing, and it brings them... Maybe catharsis, but...
Humor is good.
Yeah, humor is good. Humor is good. It's just lesser than.
No, it's not. That's where the highest justice is. Higher than the law.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, we need... You're the useful idiot. You're the one who's going to point out to all of us that the emperor has no clothes. Like, we need you. We really need you in top shape, David.
Yeah, you need people playing with value.
Right, and all those lawyers that are slaving over... you know, into the night reading case law and trying to make sure that people's houses aren't repossessed, that
right,
their children don't go into the custody of a nutcase. Or
mm-hmm.
These people are, you know, they're just functionaries.
Kind of.
Right. So class traitor. I think that's your worldview. Look, I'm not going to change it. I think this is our... And I'll admit in all this, yeah, there's some projecting going on. There is part of me that's a tad... jealous that you kind of that you had the cojones to be a traitor.
Okay.
Not to say I feel wholly oppressed by my career, my choices, my life choices. There's some oppression. I do feel somewhat.
Okay.
But so I'll admit to that. I'll give you that. There's something where I feel like, you know, that fucker actually lifted the finger to what he's supposed to do. But
okay,
I still feel like you're going to get your comeuppance.
What does that mean?
That you're going to find out that chances are... I mean, I hope not. I don't want to say that. Sounds like a nasty thing to say.
No, go on.
But I just mean that the chances of you having a good life...
Oh, my God. It's so damning. It's like everything.
Well,
that's all I have.
You're going to be a childless... low income, bearded, hipster approach in his 40s. That's your road right now, David.
No,
that's the road.
Far off.
Is it that far off?
So you want to have what? You want to have, like, not know your kids? You want to have an ulcer, and you want to have a country home you never go to, and all these things?
I think, you know, my worst case scenario is a bit more likely than your worst case scenario for me that you just presented. Okay, I think I'm a bit more accurate in terms of projecting. I'm not Nostradamus, but I think that I think that's the insecurity that people, that you detect other people have, your own class members have when they look at you, that they're projecting that. They're looking at you in the eyes, they're being like, okay, he's an oversensitive intellectual, and, you know, we wish him well.
Wait, you?
Pardon?
You?
No, I'm talking
me?
About you.
Okay.
I'm talking about you. That people might look at you and think there's a guy who's, yeah, you know, a sensitive soul, and who's, you know, has got that bohemian artistic thing.
Right.
But, you know, wait till he finds out. Wait till he finds out that that this whole anti... It's less than what your choice.
You gotta try. You gotta try something. You're gonna venture. You gotta venture. Sure, you're gonna have to.
I say fine, venture all you want. But how old are you now?
31.
31 years old.
Yeah, you know why?
Well,
obviously you know why. But
yeah,
because all this time was spent halfway.
Mm-hmm.
Had I given it more time trying out law more, then we'd have this conversation 3 years from now. Then what would be the use?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah. I hope the search is fruitful. I hope that you carry on. I mean, it just and again, in terms of grievance, to bring this all kind of back, I don't know. Again, if I've really satisfied the intention of the show,
right?
I know that these things come to mind when I think about things that disturb me about you, and these things come to mind, and you know, well, we're all gonna end up where we're headed.
That's also tried, but like,
yeah, granted. Yeah, sort of like you know, it is what it is. But I think that about wraps it up.
Right.
And otherwise, I still think I think you're great. I want you to continue being part of my
Daniel.
My story. Oh, there's one minor thing.
Okay.
And this is super fast.
Yep.
You're a mooch. You're kind of moochy.
Am I?
In a very, no, I'm not trying to say. No.
How do I? How?
I don't think there've been few interactions that I've had with you where there's not some sort of favor that you impose on me. And I'm don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm happy to do it. And in fact, I often volunteer. I don't think you noticed. You came into this office. I'm happy to feed you.
You offered me. Stuff.
I did, but I'm also kind of cutting you off. Like, I'm kind of like meeting you before it comes out. I'm also like, oh right, there's that guy David who.
Daniel, come on. I mean, you work in this law firm, and you're paying for the scotch. You're paying for the yogurt.
Well, it's not just okay. Oh, so it's an entitlement to things.
No,
that,
but
that,
it's like
I still have administration over these things.
Look, when
I decide to give them to you,
I wish that I had more to give to share with people. That's
mm-hmm.
a thing. That's something that's not a nice thing about this very impoverished way of living.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sincerely, that's one of the worst things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like the fact that oftentimes, yeah, I don't like the fact that you know, my friends are able to help me out more than I am them.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I remember when I was working, and I think I was happy to, like, you know, be more generous and cover the drink with a friend who wasn't doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not an expectation.
No, but it's a recurring thing, and it does expose the deferential the chasm between that materialist thing that you have less to offer. It does kind of expose it every time, and it's funny. I mean, just, you've called me. I remember one time you called me out of nowhere asking about a mattress or something that you needed, I think, when you were
like
moving.
Like a store something at your
place. There was something that's storing something at my place, which is fine. It's a banal, it's just not, it's pretty, you know, it's mundane. But there are other things. It kind of builds up, you know. It's
okay.
A thousand little paper cuts, and that doesn't say it wounds me. I notice it.
Is it bad? Is it like you're like, this is one of the things you like me more than others?
Well, I'm happy to oblige. I think you detect warmth whenever we have these transactions, and they're always one way. You always kind of, there's like, even yesterday when you were getting ready for your comedy show, you know, you email me.
You printed something.
Yeah, you email me your outline for your comedy, and then you're like, the subject line was one-sided, please. Exclamation point.
Yeah.
It was plain. You know, it was cute.
Why?
Well, because, you know, you could have just told me. You also in front of me when you emailed it to me. You could have just said, okay, print it one-sided.
What? That was just a playful thing. That I can't believe you interpret the one-sided message.
Well, on its own, I agree. But, I mean, in a larger context of when we went on that camping trip, I don't think you brought anything besides like a...
No one brought anything that camping
trip. That's not true. Danny and Danny and myself both bought things.
You both live in Montreal. I don't live here. So I came here on the bus for whatever, to do some stand-up or something. We would go for a weekend. Like, it's more like I come to, you know, if you were to be on the road in Toronto and come to my office and you'd have to print something, it'd be no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I sort of, you know,
I don't want you to be shy to ask going forward. I don't want to encourage that. I just wanted to identify. And yeah, and then, because you know where it mostly came up? It came up in this one time. And that's when I felt bad, because, again, I do love you. It came up in this moment when we were at dinner with Danny, his girlfriend, and this other girl, Laurence.
Okay.
And we're all lawyers, you know? We're all lawyers. Laurence works at a big firm.
Okay.
Cristal, Danny's girlfriend, works at a big firm.
Right.
Both very intelligent, high achievers.
Yeah.
Danny also is a lawyer. Yeah. We're all lawyers. We're at this dinner in, in the Plateau. And you were there, and I think we were ordering drinks.
And I didn't want an appetizer.
You remember this?
Yeah.
But there are two things. They were not only not wanting an appetizer. I mean, in general, you were kind of looking at the cheapest stuff on the menu. It was clear that there was like a budget concern.
Yeah.
But it was particular that I think we were ordering drinks, and you decided I'm going to go to the Depaneur across the street to get like a sort of personal little tiny wine bottle. Okay.
For later, for a party or something. It wasn't to eat drink at the dinner table. At the restaurant, come on.
You might be right. You might be right. I'll give you that. But the point was, there was some sort of comment about not wanting to buy the drink, it being too expensive. And Cristal made a comment.
Yeah.
Ribbing you about that.
Right.
And you wouldn't let it go.
Well, I thought it was hurtful. It was a hurtful comment. You think that I want to see my friends. I'm in town for two nights or whatever. Mm-hmm. I want to see my friends. And then I simply cannot afford to like eat like that each night.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if I'm there and you're eating your salad and I'm not, like, fucking accept that. Like, just take it, okay? Like, what? Like, I'm like, next time we go out, I mean, what if circumstances change? We're gonna go to a place that she can't afford, and I'm gonna expect her to just think to sacrifice herself for that? No, I want to have her company there.
Okay, but you're okay. Sure, you're right. No. All that said, yes. Objectively, it's not nice to make fun of someone who's on a limited budget.
Yeah.
Has less than. Of course, yeah. You're right. But I think at the same time, most jokes have a component that you know of teasing, of sort of scratching something that makes people uncomfortable. And that's the essence of humor, I think. Partly is to.
Styles wasn't a joke. She wasn't making a joke. She was saying, you should order something. You should, like, you have to order. You have to order something. We cannot sit here, and you cannot do this. This is improper.
But she was saying no. She was saying in a shticky, cute,
no, she wasn't.
Funny manner.
No, she wasn't.
I had
a conversation afterwards, and this is, like, part of her principles. Like, that's how she was raised. Every person gets it if every person is doing this.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I mean, I guess.
We're remembering it differently. Her delivery was not nasty, from my memory. Her delivery was quite socially appropriate, but your reaction wasn't. Your reaction was you were irate. You were very unhappy about it. Obviously, you're insecure. You know,
I wasn't irate. I was offended. I was deeply offended.
Yeah, okay. So you just admitted you were deeply offended, and I felt kind of bad. I felt kind of bad for you. And in fact, in that moment, I guess I'll just wrap up on that.
Okay.
In that moment, I think that's part of what I. No one likes to be pitied, and I don't pity you. I think you're together. Okay. You're smart. You're better than most. I have less pity for you than I have for most everybody.
Right.
And I also self pity at the same time. Let me be humble, but I think that you're a very smart, capable guy, and that you're not achieving in the way that people who are less smart and less able. And again, achievement, yeah, let's problematize what achievement is.
Mm-hmm.
But that moment, you were not able, you didn't have the ability to even partake in that.
Yeah, but these things.
And that's the tragedy. It's kind of like, you know, I mean, it's going to sound pretentious again. It always reminds me of that Ginsberg's howl, you know, greatest minds of my generation. On the midnight streets, praying for a fix. I mean, not to say you're an addict. You're not an addict. You're not a beatnik. You're not. But there's something about this pain I feel when I look at you, where I see a sensitive, intelligent person that is not achieving in a way that other people who are more douchey do. And what is it about this social configuration that does not permit a guy like Hetty to thrive? So I don't know who to blame. Whether it's you.
That's very sweet.
Okay, well, I mean,
well, I'll try to figure it out. That's the whole idea. I'll try to figure it out.
It's a process. It's a long process.
Can I get a hug? And we'll end on this? All right. Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
All right. So that was the end of the talk, or that was the talk with me and Daniel. I don't know. I enjoyed it very much. My stomach is feeling a little bit better now, which is also nice. This whole notion of being a class traitor, I find so laughable. I find it so ridiculous. I really think a lot of what Daniel was saying was him projecting, and I know it's not a nice thing to say this when he can't come and defend himself, but I know that he has struggled, or I believe that he has struggled with his decision to pursue a life in law, which is perfectly fine, but I just think that to say to do anything else would be to be, I don't know, wronging my parents. I mean, for Christ's sake, like, I can't believe how much is so such a perverse way of looking at the world. At the same time, though, he says, wouldn't he say that the chances of you having a good life, you know, are marginal? Something like that. That was the harshest criticism, one of the harshest I've received, I think. It's not a criticism, it's just like this terrible sort of fate. Like, he's like an elderly Eastern European woman who's cursed me, or something like this. But I think life's a process. At the same time, I mean, you know, material wealth is... Look, I had the thought last night that if I were to get a terminal illness this week, would my life decisions be more vindicated or less or not at all? And even then, I think I would have done things. Well, you know, you can die at any time. Look, I think that it's not for... No, actually, no, I still have a stomachache. It's still hurting. But I just want to say that I really do feel as though a lot of what Daniel said was him projecting his own sort of insecurities. Because these ideas of like, that it should wrong him, it should upset him so much that I, you know, say that I don't want to have children, or that he thinks I'm a class traitor. Like, these are things which shouldn't offend. Like, these are just life choices that are different than my having owed him something and wronged him in a more meaningful sense. And I guess lastly, I really feel this notion of the reasonable person is a bit of... Well, it's yeah, I guess it has its use in law, but it doesn't mean that you can't go off and do strange things, because the reasonable person also refers to community standards, community values, and what the reasonable people think is obscene or is fair or is unreasonable violence or is funny or things like this. And all these are extra legal values that are created by people who go off and do strange things, like write books and, you know, join a circus and create. And it's such a weirdly like self-serving thing to talk about, but it's just the fact of the matter. And the law operates by catching up to society's values. The law is totally reactionary. And that's it. And this is the conclusion of this episode of I Have a Problem with David Hetty. Thanks very much. Bye.